Once you identify some cities that have some things going for them, there may be a regional hub for something, or they've got something going on, you can be buying land that borders these cities, just outside of the city borders, and hold them until the city borders increase to that area. And you eventually will have something that's worth a lot more than what it is right now.
I know a family that did this here in Southern California. They bought in like on a sleepy town and they bought up a bunch of land, industrial, residential, all sorts of stuff. And it's paid off generations later.
Welcome to Turning Profit, a podcast for people that love real estate. Learn the business models and skills that professional real estate investors use to make money and build wealth. Visit turningprofit.com for a wealth of investor resources. And now, here are your hosts, Pete and Heather Reese.
Welcome to the Turning Profit podcast. Heather, it's so great to be here once again.
Yeah, so what episode is this?
This is episode 101.
And it was an easy number to remember.
Yeah, because I remember the last one was 100, and that was a big milestone for us, Heather.
Yeah, it was
100
exciting.
100 episodes. And I guess at 104, that means it's 2 years worth of episodes. 52 times two.
That's why I keep you around to do this fancy math.
Yeah, so today we are talking about a really interesting subject, and I know I say that every single week, but we are talking about land speculation. Now, land speculation is a little bit different from what we normally do, but it's an area that maybe should be a part of your overall land investment strategy.
What is it? Like, I was confused by this title, this working title.
Well, the working title, first of all, is 8 Powerful Land Speculation. Let me restate that.
Okay.
8 Powerful Land Speculation Techniques.
So powerful, you couldn't even
powerful,
say it, right?
Powerful, yes. Land speculation, and I use Perplexity to come up with a definition for this. And by the way, if you're not using Perplexity...
Oh my God, you are such a fanboy of Perplexity.
What century are you living in?
Google. I'm living in the Google.
Okay.
Well, I know.
You do you. The rest of us will be far ahead. Anyhow, land speculation. Here's the definition. Land speculation is the practice of buying undeveloped land with the expectation of selling it at a higher price in the future.
Oh, so like you're just like...
I'm not done yet, Heather.
Oh, sorry.
Speculators purchase land at low prices and hold on to it until its value increases due to factors like future developments, infrastructure projects, or market changes. Now you can comment.
Okay, so do you mean like me just as a regular person, I go out and I'm like, I think that this town is going to be like really hot in the future and I'm just going to buy it?
Yeah, it's kind of taking a bet. Taking a bet on what's going to happen in the future.
But am I also going to do these things? Like, are you talking about the infrastructure that someone else is going to do? Like, is this like more passive as opposed to me doing it?
These are more passive techniques. Instead of actively trying to increase the value of a property, this is generally a long-term hold. At least that's the way I'm framing these techniques today. These are more long-term holds where the value of the land could be worth considerably more in the future. For various reasons that we'll go into.
I don't think we've ever talked about it because our motto
okay.
are both like buy fast, sell quicker.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. I mean, except for the stuff that we know we're going into doing projects or doing stuff to them, we have never bought in true speculation form, have we?
No, not really. No.
Okay.
No, I mean, the goal with these categories of land speculation are a long-term hold where you really feel like for one reason or another, the property is going to be worth a lot more in the future.
So like, am I just going off vibes or do you have criteria?
No, I've got certain categories of land, which I think personally, could be good categories for speculation. Now, with land in any real estate investment, the location matters a whole heck of a lot. So you may be looking at this a certain category that we go over today and think, Pete said this is a good category for land speculation, but it really depends on the individual area. Is that area going to increase in value over time for various factors?
I think a lot of the stuff that when we talk about it is to get people thinking mm-hmm. and to kind of give you some of those ideas. So it's kind of like maybe you don't have a lot of people that you can talk to about land investing. And, you know, in real life, kind of weird, like go up to somebody at the coffee shop and be like, hey, what, you know, so we'll be your land friends. And we're just going to have like a conversation about different ideas, right?
Well, yeah. And to me, it makes sense to have a portion of your investments in land of some sort of various type. Now, like a lot of people have money in stocks and mutual funds and things like that. They're not looking to cash it out anytime soon, but they're thinking this is going to be worth a lot more in the future. So I think the same thing can apply to land as well. And at the end, we kind of go over some ways that you can actually hold the land long term So if you are interested in taking advantage of some techniques for speculating with land, ways that you can actually get that accomplished.
I want to jump on that because I think that's the kind of the, what they tell you is in any sort of investing, you do make sure you have your a majority of your investments in something more stable, but then put some into, you know, where you could hit a home run, right. You know, and diversify it. So
supposedly the younger you are, the more you can be skewed towards.
Right. Yeah.
You know, the more volatile type things.
Right. If you're 75 in the midst of retirement, you don't want to be investing, you know, the majority of your funds in something speculative, right?
75 is young these days, Heather.
No, but I mean, it's still like, even if you plan to live to be 95, you don't want to risk it because you're not
95.
Actively. 95. I know you're going to live to be how old?
They say the first person that is going to live to 200 has already been born.
Okay. And then I heard someone rebuke that.
I'm trying to take care of myself. So maybe I'll be the person. I don't know.
Me too. But I want my mind and body fully functional.
Another topic for another day. So let's get into these categories of land speculation. Number one, and now these are all areas that I've identified where I think that they've got some real potential. You may have some different categories on your own, but these are areas which I think, knowing what I know now, have some real potential for future value increase. Number one, industrial land. Now, industrial land is perfect for manufacturing, warehouses. The reason I think that's a good area to be invested in for the long term is that there is a push, a large push to manufacture more domestically. There was obviously a big push for a long period of time for us to kind of, what could I say, like get away from the domestic manufacturing. Like we used to have a huge manufacturing base here in the United States. Then a lot of it transitioned overseas because of cheaper labor prices and probably a lot less lax regulations, which made the manufacturing ultimately cheaper goods and services. So we shut down a lot of our manufacturing capacity here in the United States. There is a huge push to reverse that. So I really feel that trend will be increasing into the future. And obviously, if you're going to manufacture things, if you're going to have warehouses, you're going to need local stuff here in the United States in order to make that happen. And you're going to need land to do it. So the other thing that I think is going to be a big factor in that is the rise of robotics in manufacturing. So not just specialized robots that work in a factory that have been around for a long time, but also humanoid type robots, which will kind of take care of some of those menial jobs or kind of lower skilled factory type jobs. But the thing that it'll do is it's kind of even the playing field with countries that are able to manufacture really cheaply because their labor costs are so low. When you have humanoid robots, you know, like robots in the form of humans that are able to work for cents per hour, you know, it's going to even the playing field quite a bit. I know Heather doesn't believe me that's coming. We talk about it all the time.
No, Heather's just like thinking in her brain so many different things, but like most of them I won't say, but some of it, like if these tariffs plan out or, you know, play out or whatever, the future president's going to do 25% tariffs from different countries. I wonder if that will actually push this.
That's the stated reason why that's happening. So we manufacture more things domestically.
But that means we need to do all the pieces and everything. So, I mean, theoretically, sure.
Okay.
But we'll see.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I have your approval. I just think it's a good area for speculation in the future, industrial land.
No, their plan, I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
Sure. Listen, something has to change because obviously, with the election results, there are a lot of very unhappy people, right, across the country, which means they need jobs. They want more money, right? And I think one of the ways to do that is manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
Something has to change, obviously, right? So if we're just talking about land, I feel like if we're going to bring back a lot of things, yes, we need to have places to do these things.
Right.
Whether I agree or disagree or anything like that, if that's the future, this is going to be needed. I wonder if there's going to be other uses for like more industrial, like would that also be storage?
Yeah, warehousing.
You know,
warehousing is a huge growing sector.
Right.
As e-commerce continues to kind of take over their kind of retail space, the closer you can have these products available to people, the better. So, you know, Amazon distribution warehouses are
kind of
everywhere. They want things fast. It's about speed. And they're doing their best to fulfill that. So they need more warehouses closer to where people are.
And there is even talk that a lot of people or companies are stockpiling supplies because if that does happen, where are they going to store their supplies? Mm-hmm. So that could be an even more immediate need. I don't dispute this one at all. I think that we'll see how it plays out, but I do think that there's going to be more industrial needs. Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, like, there's going to be more of a need. We're not going to bring back car manufacturing like it used to be, right? But there's other ways that we could bring back manufacturing. Maybe mm-hmm. we will bring back
car manufacturing. I do think we will. I do think we will have continuing to be leader in auto manufacturing, and not just automotive, but robotics themselves. That's going to be a big thing. That's, you know, there's going to be billions of robots built in time. So we're going to need a place to do that as well. My thought process behind industrial land, I think it's a good area to be invested over the long term. Also, next category is land bordering growing cities. These are cities that actually have a lot going for them, places where people want to be. They have maybe lots of large businesses that are contributing to the economic growth of that city, things like that. So once you identify some cities that have some things going for them, there may be a regional hub for something, or they've got something going on. You can be buying land that borders these cities, you know, just outside of the city borders, and hold them until the city borders increase to that area. And you eventually we'll have something that's worth a lot more than what it is right now. Hey everyone, just a quick reminder that you can join our community for free at landconquest.com. Inside, you'll get all the resources, training, and support for building a thriving land flipping business. Once again, that's landconquest.com. All right, enjoy the rest of the show.
I know a family that did this here in Southern California. They bought in like down a sleepy town, and they bought up a bunch of land, industrial, residential, all sorts of stuff. And it's paid off generations later. Yep. Like, it's still paying off. And you see that all the time. Like, aren't there places like in back east that we were talking about? Same kind of thing. I mean, it makes sense. It expands, and then the actual infrastructure is already there. Like, they already have the medical stuff where the people can go to and shopping and all that.
The big thing is to focus on cities that have things going for them. Or maybe you identify like, hey, these businesses are moving to this city. Like, I think that's going to be a big boom thing for that city. And, you know, you're taking a bet. But just take smart bets. You know, look at the big picture. And sometimes it's pretty obvious when I look at places. I'm like, oh, that city is going places. That city is on the upswing. This city is not. So
right.
Just pick your locations wisely. But these cities do want to expand their borders, and they have the process to get kind of your land added to that city is called annexation. A lot of times just by annexing to the city itself, you can increase the value of that property. Because
have we done that before?
We haven't done it, but we considered doing it. I do want to do some of those types of projects in the future. Because I just think it's a pretty much a no-brainer. Because a lot of times you can get most of these cities as part of the annexation process, that you get the zoning set, you know, with that. So you could, you know, cut a deal with some of these cities and say, hey, I will annex here, but I got to have this zoning to do for this particular use. And if it aligns with their plan, then they're probably going to do it because they'll generate more tax revenue.
Right. It makes sense, right? If they have the resources. Would you do this for a small piece of land or only big piece of land?
I mean, I think there's probably value in both. So maybe a residential lot. I'm not sure that that's, you know, I guess it depends, but that's less interesting to me than say a land that's for a residential subdivision or some sort of commercial property, something like that is probably a lot more impactful.
So it wouldn't stop you from, it's not just residential. You're thinking industrial just as well.
Yeah. Commercial. Yeah. I think that's where the big opportunity lies. Okay. Next is, this is kind of maybe an out of the box one, but to me, it seems to really make sense. Desert land along major roadways.
I mean, that sounds exciting.
Well, if you're in Southern California and you've ever driven from Southern California to Las Vegas along the 15, I've been looking at these pieces of land for many, many years, signs on them. They're still the same pieces of property that are for sale. You know, I've been there for many, many years. And it's the middle of the desert. You know, you're driving through Death Valley. So if you've ever heard of Death Valley, it's the desert. It's about as desert as you can get. It's very hot. And, you know, you look at those properties and you think, well, what could that ever be used for? But I think it's a potential area for speculation because, first of all, I want to backtrack one step here. The major issues in the desert, why a lot of times this land is kind of not worth too much.
Because it's freaking hot in the middle of nowhere.
Well, yes. Lack of water and the climate. It's super, super hot. And it can actually be cold in the wintertime and at night. So the climate is very extreme there. How could those problems be solved in the future? So first of all, solar and battery storage can be a game changer when it comes to this, because obviously there's abundant sunlight out in the desert. You know, that's their one resource which could really be harnessed. The cost for solar electricity generation is getting to the point where it's the cheapest energy source out there. And especially if you are in areas where there's the sun is always shining, at least, you know, most of the time. That would lead to an abundance of energy, low-cost energy, which could be used for air conditioning, obviously, like climate control inside buildings. But it can also lead to potential things like desalinization of water. So say, for instance, you had abundant energy, abundant, like very, very inexpensive energy. You could run a pipeline from the ocean and I don't know how that would work. You'd have to pump it somehow because I'm sure getting over mountains and things like that, but I'm sure it could be figured out. And then you desalinate the water and you can have a thriving community around there. So anyhow, this is a more speculative thing, but I do think that it has quite a lot of potential for things like that, especially if you could get those areas zoned properly for warehousing, distribution, commercial of some sort. You know, there's some things that really could happen with that. Obviously, it's a more speculative thing, but I do think that has a lot of potential.
I mean, there's some sort of pipeline that comes from Vegas to us, or, you know, like the Sierra. Is it the Sierra Nevadas? I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking the wrong direction, but I think water, yes, but I think that can be mitigated. Like you can truck it in or what have you. You could do rain barrel collection. Like I think electricity in a lot of ways is the biggest issue in the harsh climate.
Mm-hmm.
Also, no, I don't want to live in the middle of...
No, I'm not saying you'd want to live there, but...
I have my limits.
But it could be a desert oasis. Just think if you had abundant water and abundant energy. I mean, what you could do. I mean, Las Vegas is a pretty good example of that, like what can be accomplished in the middle of the desert. They have cheap power because of the Hoover Dam, and they have water availability from the Colorado River. I just think that there's in the future, there's a lot of potential there.
So would you buy it right now?
Probably.
Are you ready to call one of those signs the next time we're driving?
I'll have the kids call it while I'm driving. Yeah.
Yeah, I have veto power. No, but I do. I think, okay, when I think of it, I jump to that. But that's not like the only thing on the... That's my vision when you say this, mm-hmm. but that's not the case. We've done a cross-country road trip. We've seen all of the country. We went like the north route one way and we went the south route the other. And there's a lot of places that we're doing an extreme mm-hmm. where there's some that are a lot less extreme that mm-hmm. would make sense. And as long as you have that traffic... going, you know, by you. Like we talk about this too. What country was that? Vienna or something where we stopped to get gas and Vienna's not a country.
Austria. Yes.
Austria, sorry. And it was like this road stop that was just like the most fantastic thing ever. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that.
It was like this huge, like it was a buffet. No, not really. It was a, what do you call that? Like
cafeteria style.
Mm-hmm. It had everything you need. I'm like, why are we not utilizing? There's people that are making these road trips. There's people that are driving. There's so much land on those routes. And I guess that's why those Buc-ee's. Have we been to a Buc-ee's before?
I don't know if we actually went inside. We drove past them.
But what's the one we like?
Oh, the truck stop?
Yeah
Love's truck stop. We stopped at Love's truck stops the whole time on our road trip.
Even things like that, like you were thinking on a smaller scale or a bigger scale. Like there's so much opportunity. I would do something like that where it's like one of those big stretches.
Yeah, it would make sense. EV charging, another opportunity.
Solar powered, but with big battery backups so that when you don't have it and people can charge. Like I would do that.
Makes sense. Farmland. So farmland is one of those things that is disappearing over time. You
there's
know?
A lot of people buying it up.
A lot of smart people are buying it up and just accumulating it. And they're speculating that it's going to be worth more in the future. And historically, farmland as an asset class has produced some really good returns over time. And when you think about kind of the big picture that the farmland is disappearing because it's getting developed over time, that means that the available farmland is shrinking. So you would think that it's a supply and demand thing. You know, we're still going to need that farmland to grow our food, and that's not going to go away anytime in the near future. So you would think over time that farmland that does exist is going to be more and more valuable over time.
Yeah, especially if you can get on some of these newer ways of growing and...
The efficiencies will only grow over time, exactly. And if you can have some of that remaining farmland that still has great soils and good location and everything like that, you could probably do pretty well with that over time. So I think that's a really good category to be involved with.
There's a really good reason why so many people are doing that, like big name people that are doing it. Aren't they also trying to buy up, like, what do you call that? Kind of like open territory, and is it like Montana, or is that a long
ranch land?
Ranch land, yeah, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
same kind of thing. They're trying to connect them, and it's going to preserve our animals, our resources. So,
and the thing about farmland as well is that you can actually generate some income off that while you hold it. Now, it's not going to be big income. You can lease these farms out to farmers and everything, but it does, you know, help offset property taxes.
And I'm sure there's some tax advantage stuff too. There always has been, right?
So. Yeah. Farmland. And then next is kind of, this is kind of a general category, anywhere in the path of progress. So it could be growing regions, growing cities. If you just kind of look on the map and you just really think about things and regions that are sort of growing and looking along major roadways and trying to just understand the way that the progress is moving, you know, you could be far out of that area where the progress is happening right now. But if you look at historical maps of how these areas have grown over time, it would only be a matter of time till it expands into these other areas. So anytime you can get, you know, the right property in the path of progress in some way, it's likely going to be worth more in the future.
Yeah, we've been to Austin a few times, and each time we go, I'm like, wow, it's getting, you know, we haven't been there the past 5 years, so I should say. Doesn't feel like it's been that long, but has it been? Yeah.
I think so.
2019, so. Yeah. But we went multiple times over the years before that. Like, that's a really good example where you just kind of like, you pick up like, oh, it seems like a lot of people are moving to an area. And if you got in early, you know?
Yeah, you did pretty well. Yeah, the land around Austin is actually very valuable now. Okay, so path of progress, that's, you know, kind of a general category, but an important one. Are you looking to scale your land flipping business quickly? Well, we're happy to present our new cutting-edge system built specifically for land flippers. Take a look at the Land Conquest Business System today, and you'll gain full access to a customizable pre-made website, CRM, dedicated phone numbers, text automations, 24/7 support, and more. It's basically a business in the box. Go to software.landconquest.com to learn more. This next one is not land, but the value is in the land, closed commercial properties. Now, when I'm talking about this, I mean shopping malls, like old, like shut down shopping malls, factories, warehouses that are no longer functioning. So many of these things are actually located in prime locations. So the land is a prime location. It may not make sense to actually like remodel these places, like remodel the mall or remodel this warehouse and get it up and going, but they can make prime locations for future development. You know, as soon as the land runs out, where people are just building on land that has not been built on, they're going to be looking at these types of locations like, hey, this is a great spot right here. Why don't we just build something here? So I think that some of these can be, you can probably pick them up for land value in a lot of cases. There's some really good opportunities, I think, for them to be worth quite a bit more in the future. And then also you can work with developers that have a long-term plan with that property to kind of repurpose it. And then there's the possibility to squeeze some income out of these while you wait for the right development opportunity. Say you buy a shopping mall with huge parking lots or something like that. Obviously, you could rent them out for certain events or certain vendors or pumpkin patch once a year or selling Christmas tree, you know, stuff like that, random stuff like that.
Yeah, I think Amazon rented out one around here to park their trucks at night.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't have thought of that, but I was like, what is going on? Why are there like 5,000? Not really, but
automotive, you know, tent sales, all kinds of crazy stuff like that.
Yeah, but you just have to get creative.
Yeah, you're not going to get rich off of those types of things, but at least you'll probably be able to offset some of the expenses. Anyhow, I think there's a big opportunity there, especially if you're able to pick these things up for the right price. When people look at these things, they're like, what am I going to do with an old shopping mall? Or what am I going to do with this old warehouse that's falling down with all these broken windows and stuff? I would just look at it as a land play rather than, you know, simply just whatever it is right now.
Don't think you have to reimagine the existing use or buildings or anything. It's heartbreaking to think about getting rid of malls that we used to go to in the 80s and 90s. I'm like, that's horrible. But I think we need to reframe our visions when we're building things or doing that. Maybe, you know, I'm sure when they built that, they thought they're building a mall that's going to be around forever, right? And maybe we need to reframe it in that we're building something that's going to be useful for where we're at right now and do our best to accommodate that, because I think we can't imagine what the future really is going to have. No one would have thought if you told someone in 1985 that or 84 that a lot of people are going to get their stuff delivered to the door from a magical computer that, you know what I mean? They'd have been like, what? Like, huh? I don't even think credit cards were that, you know, use
they
that.
Had them, they just had those phone book things where you had to look them up and you go to Kmart or something.
Oh, yeah. Make sure it wasn't on the
blacklist.
And
I remember my parents like paying for something with the credit card and they pull out this book to make sure your number's on there.
Yeah.
Not on there. It's like,
and you had to like
decline.
Literally like slide the, you know what
I
mean?
Yeah. Like, those. So it made an imprint of your credit card. It's too funny. So we've got two more categories here, Heather. Next one are rezoning opportunities. This would be, I guess, considered more of an active type thing, but it could be a long-term project. And that's kind of why I threw it in the land speculation, you know, category, because it is speculative in a way. Like, there's no guarantee that you're going to get any of this rezoning done. But some properties, when you look at the map and you look what's around them, it just makes sense to rezone them. And, you know, a lot of times that's going from residential to commercial. Sometimes it's going the opposite direction from commercial to residential. But there can be cases where you increase the value of that piece of land significantly because it's really not a great fit for the zoning that it has right now. So it's probably not been built on for a reason because, say, you've got a residential property next to all this commercial stuff. Like, who's going to want to live like right next to the warehouses and factories and all that kind of stuff, when it would make more sense if it was a zoned industrial or something like that. So you have opportunities like that. And when you look and you just kind of really evaluate what the highest and best use of that property is, there's potentially some good rezoning opportunities where you can create some value.
I think too, though, just sometimes holding it, knowing, okay, this is kind of coming down the pipeline. And if I do it now, no one's going to want to do it because they're just not there yet. Could it be also a good way you're holding it with the anticipation of doing that at some point, 5-10 years later?
The last category is land that is nearly worthless today.
Wow.
Could have value in the future.
Boy.
Could is the...
Way to insult that one.
Well, I'm talking about these could be, these might be more speculative in nature than some of the other categories, but they could be something that that could make sense. You know, things like wetlands. You know, wetlands don't really have much of a use as aside from their environmental use, the ecosystems and everything that live there. But potentially there will be a huge market for wetland mitigation in the future. So that could be very valuable land to certain developers and things to mitigate some of their wetland, the projects where they have to mitigate wetlands. Also, landfills. I know this is a crazy one, but why would you want to own a landfill? I probably wouldn't, but there's been a lot of cases where, some of these landfills are located in pretty prime locations. They get repurposed by the city or the county or whoever owns this or whatever developer they sell it to. And then it becomes industrial land, or, they're building lots of solar farms mm-hmm. on landfills, old landfills. So there could be ways to increase value that way.
I want to talk a little of that, and then I'm going to do that last one for you too.
Okay.
And there was just some sort of sports forum or event center that was just built on one here, I think. Mm-hmm. Your only problem is that, you're in charge of that mitigation, which could be, I don't know if there's problems or if there's like you're taking on responsibility. However, I think that there, like what you just said, it makes complete sense. Like, a solar farm might be exactly what is needed there because you're hoping people aren't going to be walking under the solar panel. You know what I mean? Like, right. It could be like a community thing. So I think that's one of those things where you need to really know, but it could be very useful and financially beneficial, right?
Yep. You have to be smart and creative.
And then the last one I thought was interesting that you put on this list, that you could be part of a solution, right? So like areas that are kind of in turmoil for various reasons, you could get in there and maybe be part of the solution. So like you want to do it in a respectful way for the community, right? So that you're not forcing people out so they don't have places they can't live in. At the same time, if there's like a high crime in the area or something like that, you can provide that stable housing, kind of get in there, or commercial or whatever. So if there's pieces of land that are in that area, you could provide the resources that the communities need.
Creating communities where people feel safe, mm-hmm. Where business can prosper, and people actually want to live there. They will choose to live there. And a lot of those, maybe high crime areas or areas with a lot of issues, they're probably, you can buy them for a reasonable price. And, maybe you can sense that those areas could be worth more in the future with the right steps.
The issue is they need resources, right? Mm-hmm. And they need jobs and they need all that kind
of
stuff.
They need business coming in.
Yeah.
They need economic activity, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it might not be easy, but it's if you're going into it the long haul and with a good plan, you could really make a difference there.
Okay. So those are the categories for land speculation, the areas where I feel that, like, there is some potential. The last thing is, like, how are you actually going to do this? A lot of people say, well, that all sounds great. How am I going to buy this piece of land and just, like, hold on to it forever without producing any income? Some ways to get this done: if you have an old 401k or a self-directed 401k or self-directed IRA, first of all, if you got an old 401k sitting in a company or whatever, you can always roll that over into a self-directed IRA.
We're not financial professionals, so please speak to your own 401k person.
That's Heather's disclaimer. But, you know, I know a lot of investors, including ourselves, have utilized self-directed 401ks and self-directed IRAs in order to make these investments. You have to be with a special company in order to make that happen, but you can actually direct those funds how you want. You don't just have to put them into stocks or mutual funds, anything like that. So if you've got funds sitting there and you don't want to be fully invested in the stock market, you can actually use those funds to buy pieces of land, just hold them long term. You know, you're not going to be, you know, generating income from some of these type of strategies, but maybe you think it's a good part of your long-term plan. Do you have a great deal under contract? Well, submit it to partnerwithpete.com. The Partner with Pete program is a deal funding program where we will actually use our funds to complete the purchase of the property. We will do every other step of the process, including the due diligence, the transaction side, the marketing side, and the transaction on the resale side. And when all the dust settles, we will split the profits 50-50. There is no downside for you as an investor, only upside. So once again, go to partnerwithpete.com, submit your deal there, and let's get it funded.
I'm laughing at your, I read it too, go on.
A buy with seller financing?
I wasn't laughing at that one. I like that one. That's like my favorite way to finance stuff. I think it makes sense because then the seller's getting the money directly. Like it just takes a lot of these little like middle things out of the picture. I don't know. I love seller financing. I think it's best for both sides, but
Seller finance is a great tool, especially with land. In a lot of these cases, you know, many times people might have a piece of land, which they don't view as having a lot of value at this point. But if you feel like it's got potential in the future and you work on a reasonable payment that makes sense for you, maybe there's a strategy there. And the other thing, the last thing on the list, which Heather was laughing at, is rich uncle
or aunt.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Rich uncle or rich aunt that potentially wants to partner with you on one of these long-term
Where's our rich uncle and rich aunt?
Loan you money or give you money or something like that.
Okay. I like it. While you were talking, I was looking at my phone because I was pulling up the next segment so I could jump into it quickly.
Yes, the next segment is the questions from our community.
Wait, we didn't do my favorite segment. I felt so powerful doing that, like just throwing it off the table. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So what are we doing next?
Yes. These are questions from our land conquest community. And if you are interested in checking out our free land community, land investing community, you can find that on the school platform, which is skool.com. And it's called Land Conquest. So you can also find it by just going to landconquest.com. And there's a button on there to click to get to our community.
Wait, for school, would it be like skool.com/landconquest?
Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. We've cherry-picked four questions from our community, so let's dive into them one by one, Heather.
Let's be honest. Pete picked these, and he gets to read them beforehand, so these are all new to me. Jay says, end of your marketing mailing, question mark. As someone about to start off with the first round of marketing, I wanted to set myself up for success. Is it usually not good to send mailers at the end of the year around the holidays due to lower response rates? Is it in fact true? Then what would be the best time to start? Also, do you charge or change your marketing timeline in more northern states where there could be snow on the ground? Those are really good questions.
Yeah,
both
two-part
of them.
Question. Mm-hmm. First of all, been involved in real estate and investing side of real estate for quite some time, and this is the best time of the year to get deals. I always think it's an amazing time to get deals. A lot of people turn off their marketing. A lot of real estate agents and things kind of get focused on other things, the holidays and Santa and whatever else is going on. I'm always focused on getting deals at this time of the year. So I'm a big believer that you should keep your marketing going.
Said Santa.
Well,
we know where Pete's excited about Santa.
Yeah, I am excited about Santa and hopefully I get what I'm asking for this year.
No, it's because, listen, there's a lot of people, I am like the type that likes to close things out at the end of the year. And if I have something sitting there like that just bothers me, I'm like, just sell it. Like, get rid of it. I don't want to deal with it next year. Mm-hmm. That's a complete legitimate thing. It happens to people all the time. They think that way. I'm one of them. The other thing is that if you're short on cash and you want to, you know, spend money on the holidays, what better way to do it than sell something?
Right.
Those two things just make sense.
Yeah.
And there's not as much competition because everyone else is thinking, oh no, no one wants to do anything. And au contraire, mon frère, my little French there. I know. So I don't know. I agree with you. I think it's a good time. Don't do what everyone else is doing.
Be the contrarian. Okay. And the second part of that question is tailoring marketing towards or away from the colder areas over the wintertime. And I think that's a good strategy. You know, personally, it does take a little bit of time to get these deals under contract and to get into the point where you're marketing them. So I feel like it's coming into the winter, like we are now, we're in November as we're filming this, coming into the winter, I would definitely hold off in sending out marketing to some of those areas. I think you could probably start ramping it up in maybe like February to March-ish, somewhere in there.
That's not about the price of the deal or getting the deal. It's so that you're limiting your hold time.
Right.
Because you're not going to be able to sell it, theoretically.
Yes, it's harder. It's harder. There's less buyers out there looking around for land.
Literally. Literally, they're not out there looking, like walking the land.
They're in hibernation in some of these areas. Yeah. So we don't really have that problem here in Southern California and like the Southern states. It's not as big of a thing, but some of those very Northern states and very Northeastern states as well, like it's cold over the wintertime. There's just less activity. It's harder to sell stuff during that time of the year. So yeah, I would focus my marketing to areas where it's more of a year-round market.
Right. And then you could ramp it back up with, you know, if you do your math backwards and figure out when do I need to buy it, you know, close the sale. So how long does it take to get that and to be able to sell it in the spring?
Yeah. And potentially, maybe you're not as concerned about hold time as we are, but you know, maybe if you are not as concerned, it'd be a good time to buy stuff in those areas.
Yeah, because so, you might have more.
It comes down to personal strategy.
Okay, Mike says, text messaging for leads.
What does the question say, Heather? I know you don't like text messaging.
I literally got one yesterday and I was like, I don't even know what to say anymore. Hey, it's for real estate too. That's what gets me every time. Hey, gang, what's the general consensus for generating leads via text messaging? I was looking into signing up for Launch Control as another avenue for leads. Don't do it. Okay, go ahead, Pete. Go ahead. You tell what you want to say.
Launch Control is kind of the premium option.
Hey, I don't know who Launch Control is, by the way, so I'm not bagging on that.
Well, I don't know. I've never used them either.
But I was just talking about text messaging.
But from what I know, Launch Control is kind of the premium platform, I guess you could say, for text messaging outreach for real estate leads. But what I can tell you, though, about text messaging for leads is that's really, really dropped off over the last, you know, year and a half or so. Maybe a little bit longer. The rules used to be more of the wild, wild west. They've put in a lot more restrictions, the cell phone carriers, and delivering your text messages is getting harder and far harder. They basically don't let you say certain things that allow you to efficiently generate leads that way. So it used to be a really big thing in land investing. A lot less land investors are using it. Some are still using it and some are successful, but I think it's a lot harder road than it used to be. So we don't do it. So I guess I can't say from personal experience, we don't do text messaging for leads, but I know it's a lesser and lesser thing right now.
Next question. Sam says, Regrid says 9, County says 6, GIS says 6. Thank you for this one, Pete.
GIS, Heather.
Oh, yeah. I was like, I have no idea what this is. Thank you. County records as well as deeds show 6 acres. GIS also shows 6 acres. Regrid shows it as 9 acres. I'm not sure who is wrong, but we'll have to assume it is 6 acres and not 9 acres. I've not seen this before and just wanted to share. Oh, Sam, this would make me lose my mind.
We run into this a lot. There's always discrepancies. Sometimes you measure on the map and it shows 9 acres. Sometimes it says 6 acres and, you know, maybe the legal description and the deed says 6 acres. I would always go with the lesser amount, kind of assume that's what it is. And maybe you get a survey and you determine down the road that it's actually 9 acres and you get a bonus 3 acres or something like that. But for the most part, you have to assume the lesser amount. And if there's just some weird, funky stuff going on with the map and legal description and something like that, I would recommend getting a survey because that's the only way you're really going to figure out what's what.
Yeah, I mean, always be conservative. It kind of sucks to have to get a survey, but it's better safe than sorry. That's just, I mean, and you get that feeling like, this doesn't seem right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So spend the money now as opposed to losing the money later.
Yes.
Taking a big loss. Okay. Thomas, I feel like calling Tomas, but I don't even know him. So it says, I only have $4,000 in capital to spend on my mail campaign. Hey, everyone, I'm new to land flipping. I have about $4,000 to spend on sending out my mail. I already have 2 markets targeted and have a priced account to get my list. I am not going to get an automated answering service so I can get the reps in with talking to sellers. Okay. I opened up an LLC and then got a business card, but only with a $2,000 limit. I was planning on spending $2,000 the first month and $2,000 the following month on the mail. Do you think this will be sufficient to get started? Also, any advice would be great. Thanks.
Well, I do have to say, I just to be honest and say, that's a pretty small budget. It generally costs us more than $2,000 in order to get one deal. So it really depends on what type of properties that you are focusing on. Are you focusing on lesser value properties? If you are, then there's a potential to make that work. Because it's easier to get, you know, a $5,000 property than it is to get a
$50,000
property or even more. So I would keep that in consideration. I would also look into building some really refined lists. You know, like since you are very limited on your budget, I would spend a lot of time really focusing on that list, getting it as narrowed down as possible, so you have it as little waste as possible. Because if you're doing some high volumes, a lot of times you're going to have a lot of records in that list that even if they came back and they responded and they wanted to sell it, you're not going to want to buy it because it's the things got problems. So I would look into the land portal. That's actually a place where you can build some really tailored lists. It allows you to filter for things like wetlands and landlocked properties, flood zone, road frontage, things like that. So you can build some really tailored lists. Now, you're not going to get as huge of a number when you have so many filters on, but there's the great better likelihood that you're going to get the types of properties that you want to buy. So I would look into something like that.
Yeah, you either have to do the money or the spending your time. Mm-hmm. It's one or the other,
right?
Or you could do both.
Yeah, and you can manually on that land portal, you can actually do those filters and then manually go through and look at the map and like uncheck certain properties that you don't want in your list. So it's kind of powerful if you are willing to spend the extra time to create those lists.
Yeah, maybe if it's primarily underwater
that you don't want to buy.
Right, that's a quick one. But then that begs the question he didn't ask, but how is he going to buy the properties afterwards? Yeah. So maybe he'll use a partner with Pete.
Partner with Pete. Yeah. So if you don't know about Partner with Pete, it can be found at partnerwithpete.com. And that's our funding program. So we actually do funding, meaning we will partner with people. We will also do wholesale purchases or assignment fees to investors in some cases. So basically, we will work with you to try to find the best solution. If the deal that's got enough profit margin and fits our buying criteria, then we can potentially partner with you on that property, meaning we will use all of our funds to purchase the property. We will do all the due diligence. We'll handle all the marketing, the transaction, the resale. And then at the end of the day, we will split the profits with you and send you out a wire at closing. It's a real win-win scenario. You don't have to put out any of those funds yourself. And you get to leverage our team that's really a well-oiled machine at this point to do pretty much every step of the process. Your job is getting those deals, getting those deals under contract, and then we can work together on some of these and make it a win-win.
And if your budget is, minimal like that, then you just have to build up.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
You take one, you get your money back, and then you use that, the profit to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It might be a slower process, but you can do it. And there's a lot of learning in that too.
Well said, Heather. Well, that wraps up a great episode. I think that there's a lot of interesting things that can be done with land speculation. And next week, tune in for another great episode. Not sure what that will be about, but I'm sure it'll be great.
And if you have suggestions for them, you message Pete in the Land Conquest
community
with them.
Yeah, or even in the comments in YouTube or something. Mm-hmm. So that'd be great. Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Ready to start turning profit yourself? Head to turningprofit.com to step up your real estate investing game. See you on the next episode.